Welcome to a deep dive into something that's causing a lot of discussion these days.
Yeah.
The EU's new law on restoring nature.
Right.
You've sent us a bunch of EU documents, laws, strategies, reports, and we're going to try to break it all down.
Yeah. It's a pretty hot topic.
It is.
And for good reason.
Yeah.
Europe's biodiversity is really struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And this law aims to turn things around.
Okay, so let's jump right in.
Okay.
The EU's State of Nature 2020 report
kind
of paints a bleak picture of what's going on.
Yeah.
What's the main takeaway there?
So the report highlights a pretty widespread decline in both habitats and species.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the biggest culprits are intensive agriculture, urbanization, pollution, and unsustainable forestry practices.
Mm-hmm.
And also how we manage water also plays a big role.
Okay.
It's a pretty sobering assessment of just the pressures facing Europe's natural world.
Yeah, and the report specifically calls out invasive species as a major threat.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like a silent invasion happening right under our noses.
Yeah, and of course, you can't forget about climate change.
Oh, right.
Which just adds another layer of complexity to protecting biodiversity.
Yeah, so that's the backdrop.
Yeah.
Now, on to the law itself.
Okay.
It aims to restore damaged ecosystems across 20% of the EU's land and sea by 2030.
That's ambitious.
It is ambitious. And get this, by 2050, all L ecosystems that need restoration should be on the road to recovery.
Incredibly ambitious.
Yeah.
And it's important to understand that this law is part of a bigger picture.
Okay.
The EU Biodiversity Strategy for 2030.
Okay.
This strategy outlines a comprehensive plan to put Europe's nature on a path to recovery.
So it's not just about restoring what's been damaged. It's also about proactively protecting what's still healthy.
Exactly. The strategy also includes protecting at least 30% of land and sea areas.
Wow.
With a third of that under strict protection.
Okay.
And there's a special focus on safeguarding all remaining primary and old growth forests because of their crucial role in biodiversity.
Okay, so big goals. But how does the law actually translate those goals into action?
Well, it gets into the nitty-gritty, setting specific targets for different types of ecosystems.
Okay.
Forests, grasslands, rivers, peatlands, and even urban areas.
Yeah.
It's very comprehensive.
Yeah, and the source material we have actually lists all these targets out.
Yeah.
But maybe you could highlight a few of the most captivating ones.
Sure.
The ones that'll really get people excited.
Okay, well, one that stands out is the target of restoring at least 25,000 kilometers of free-flowing rivers.
Wow.
Imagine all those rivers freed from obsolete dams and barriers just surging back to life.
Yeah.
This could revitalize entire ecosystems and bring back lost species.
Yeah.
It's also about reconnecting people with their rivers,
uh-huh.
creating opportunities for recreation and tourism.
Okay. That one definitely sparks the imagination.
Yeah.
I can already picture those wild rivers flowing freely again.
Yeah.
What else?
Another fascinating target is the focus on bringing back pollinators. The law aims for a continuous increase in pollinator populations from 2030 onwards.
Why are pollinators so important?
Well, they're crucial for our food security.
Okay.
They play a vital role in fertilizing crops,
uh-huh.
ensuring we have fruits, vegetables, and nuts to eat.
Yeah.
And a decline in pollinator populations could have a devastating impact on agricultural yields and even lead to food shortages.
Wow. I hadn't thought about it like that.
Yeah.
So this law isn't just about protecting butterflies and bees.
Right.
It's about ensuring we have food on our tables.
Precisely. It's about recognizing the interconnectedness of nature and human well-being.
And speaking of interconnectedness, I'm seeing here targets related to agricultural land.
Yeah.
So it's not just about protected areas. Right. It reaches into the spaces where we grow our food.
Absolutely. The law mandates improving biodiversity on agricultural land, even if it's not a designated protected area.
Okay.
It's about making biodiversity conservation mainstream.
So even farmers who might not have a deep interest in conservation
right.
will have to make changes to how they manage their land.
Yes. And this is where some of the controversy surrounding the law comes in.
Huh?
Because some farmers worry that these requirements could impact their productivity.
Yeah.
Or increase their costs.
Mm-hmm.
But the law also recognizes the need to support farmers
okay.
in making these transitions.
So it's a balancing act.
Yeah.
Trying to protect nature while ensuring that farmers can continue to produce food.
Right.
Sounds like some tough conversation.
Definitely. But the EU seems committed to finding solutions that work for both people and nature.
Okay. So we've got ambitious goals, specific targets for different ecosystems.
Yes.
And this recognition that nature is intricately connected to human well-being.
Hmm.
But how does the law actually make all of this happen?
Right.
It can't just be good intentions on paper.
Of course not.
Right.
The law has some key mechanisms to turn these aspirations into reality.
Okay.
Each member state is obligated to create a national restoration plan, outlining exactly how they'll achieve the targets.
So it's not a one-size-fits-all.
Yeah.
Each country has some flexibility.
Yes, but it's not a free-for-all either.
Okay.
The EU will be monitoring progress closely and reporting on it regularly.
So there's some pressure to perform.
Right.
What about funding?
Yeah.
All of this restoration work is going to require significant investment.
It is.
Where's the money coming from?
That's a crucial question.
Yeah.
And the law is quite specific about funding mechanisms.
Okay.
It identifies various sources, including existing EU funds, like the Common Agricultural Policy.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Could you break those down? What are those programs?
So the Common Agricultural Policy, or COAKP, is the EU's agricultural subsidy program.
Okay.
It's a massive source of funding for farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And the new law aims to redirect some of that funding towards practices that benefit biodiversity.
Okay.
And then you have the LIFE program,
uh-huh.
which is another EU funding instrument specifically focused on environmental and climate action projects.
Okay, so they're leveraging existing funding streams to support this new law.
Exactly. And in addition to these existing funds, the law also encourages private investments.
Okay.
Through initiatives like InvestEU,
mm-hmm.
which can unlock capital from businesses and impact investors.
No. Okay, so a mix of public and private money.
Right.
But what happens if a country just doesn't meet its targets?
Yeah. Well, the source material explicitly states that countries that fail to comply with the law could face legal challenges.
Oh, wow.
This is a serious piece of legislation.
Yeah.
And the EU is signaling that it's prepared to enforce it.
So there are real teeth behind this law.
Exactly. The EU is sending a clear message. Restoring nature is a priority, and they're willing to use their legal and financial muscle to make it happen.
Well, that's reassuring.
Yeah.
It sounds that the EU means business this time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also important to acknowledge that this law hasn't been without its critics.
Yes, there have been concerns raised, particularly from those in agriculture and forestry.
Like what?
About the potential impacts on their industries.
Such as?
Well, some worry that the restoration targets are too strict.
Okay.
Or that they clash with existing land uses.
Uh-huh.
Others have expressed concerns about the potential costs of compliance and the impact on their livelihoods.
So there's this tension between the collective good of restoring nature
right.
and the economic interests of certain industries.
Exactly. And the law attempts to address this tension by striking a balance.
Okay.
For example, it includes a specific exemption for unavoidable changes to habitats caused by climate change.
So they're acknowledging that sometimes you can't just freeze nature in time.
Exactly. It's about finding ways to adapt to a changing climate while still prioritizing restoration.
Yeah.
But it's definitely an ongoing debate with valid points being raised on both sides.
And this debate is far from over, right?
Yeah.
The source material states that the EU Commission is required to report on the law's implementation every 6 years.
Right.
So this is a story that's just beginning.
Absolutely. This is a dynamic process. Mm-hmm. And the coming years will be crucial in seeing how this ambitious law plays out in practice.
Yeah, I'm definitely intrigued.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll delve deeper into the implications of this law and how it fits into the EU's broader sustainability agenda.
Sounds good.
All right, we're back and ready to dive deeper into this ambitious nature restoration law.
Yeah.
Earlier, we touched on the EU's broader sustainability agenda.
Right.
This European Green Deal.
Yeah.
It sounds like they're trying to, like, fundamentally reshape Europe's economy.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
The European Green Deal is a sweeping set of policies aimed at making Europe climate neutral by 2050.
Okay.
It's about transforming the EU's economy to be more sustainable.
Okay.
Tackling climate change and protecting biodiversity all at the same time.
Okay, that sounds huge, almost overwhelming in scope.
Yeah.
What are some of the key goals they're aiming for?
Well, the Green Deal has several core objectives.
Mm-hmm.
Achieving climate neutrality by 2050 is the big one. That means drastically reducing greenhouse gas emissions and finding ways to offset any remaining emissions.
Right.
Protecting biodiversity, as we've been discussing, is another major pillar.
Mm.
And they also want to transition to a circular economy.
A circular economy.
Yeah.
That's a new one for me.
Yeah. So think of it this way.
Okay.
Our current economic model is largely linear.
Okay.
We take resources, make products, use them, and then throw them away.
Right.
A circular economy aims to close that loop.
Okay.
It's about designing products that can be reused and recycled, minimizing waste, and keeping resources in circulation for as long as possible.
So instead of ending up in a landfill, products and materials get a second life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's about creating a more sustainable and resilient system where resources are valued and used more efficiently.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So back to the nature restoration law.
Okay.
How does it fit into this bigger picture of the European Green Deal?
Well, this law is a key piece of the puzzle.
Okay.
As we've discussed, restoring ecosystems can have significant climate benefits.
Yeah. Think carbon sequestration.
Right.
And healthier ecosystems can support economic activities.
Okay.
Like sustainable tourism and agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about shifting our mindset, recognizing that nature has intrinsic value beyond its economic utility.
It's like they're trying to change our whole relationship with the natural world.
Exactly. And that's a big challenge.
Yeah.
But we connect this back to you, the listener. This law has implications far beyond just the environment.
Right. I was thinking about someone prepping for a sustainability meeting.
Yeah.
But this is relevant for someone in finance policy.
Absolutely.
Even healthcare.
Absolutely. The source material even highlights the connection between biodiversity loss and the risk of pandemics.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, it's a growing area of research.
That's a bit unsettling.
Yeah. A loss of biodiversity can disrupt natural ecosystems, creating conditions that make it easier for diseases to spread from animals to humans.
Okay, that's definitely something to consider.
Yeah.
So this law has wide-ranging implications.
It does. But I'm also curious about the specifics of how it'll be implemented.
Okay.
The source material gets pretty dense with legal jargon.
It can be overwhelming.
Yeah.
But here's a key takeaway. The law emphasizes using science and data to guide restoration efforts.
That makes sense. You don't want to just be winging it
right
when it comes to restoring these complex ecosystems.
Yep.
So what does that look like in practice?
Well, each member state has to monitor and report on its progress toward the targets.
Okay.
And this monitoring needs to be based on solid scientific evidence.
So accountability through data.
Yeah.
Who's doing the actual monitoring? Scientists trekking through forests, wading through rivers.
It's likely a mix of actors.
Okay.
The source material mentions existing monitoring programs, new technologies like satellite imagery,
mm-hmm.
and even citizen science initiatives.
Citizen science. So regular people can help collect data.
It's a growing trend.
That's awesome.
Getting the public involved not only helps with data collection, but also raises awareness.
Yeah.
And builds support for restoration.
It's like turning nature restoration into a collective effort. I love that.
Precisely. And the law emphasizes collaboration at all levels.
Okay.
Not just within countries, but across the EU.
Mm-hmm.
Countries will need to share best practices and learn from each other's successes and challenges.
So countries working together to restore shared ecosystems?
Right.
Like rivers that flow across borders?
Exactly. The source material highlights the importance of cross-border cooperation.
Okay.
Especially for those shared ecosystems.
Mm-hmm.
And this collaborative approach extends to the funding mechanisms as well.
Okay, remind me again, where is that funding coming from?
The law encourages a mix of public and private investment, recognizing that this will require a collective effort.
Okay.
Public funding from the EU and national governments will be essential, but they're also looking to attract private capital from businesses, impact investors, and even individuals.
So it's not just about governments writing checks. It's about creating a space for businesses and investors to participate in restoring nature.
Yes, and this taps into a growing recognition that environmental protection and economic growth can go hand in hand.
Mm.
It's about creating a new model of sustainable development,
mm.
where nature is seen as an asset, not just a resource to be exploited.
I'm hearing a lot about green jobs and sustainable investments these days. Is that what you're talking about here?
Exactly. The source material even suggests that this law could create new economic opportunities as Europe invests in restoring its ecosystems.
Okay.
It's about creating a future where economic prosperity goes hand in hand with a thriving natural world.
All right, now that's a vision I can get behind.
Yeah.
It's not just about fixing what's broken. It's about building a better future.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
It's about recognizing that our future well-being is fundamentally intertwined with the health of the natural world.
And speaking of well-being,
yeah.
Earlier we talked about the potential link between biodiversity loss and the risk of pandemics. That's a pretty sobering thought.
It is.
Yeah.
But it also highlights the importance of taking a holistic approach to these challenges.
Mm-hmm.
We can't address climate change in isolation from biodiversity loss or public health.
Right.
They're all interconnected.
So it's not just about
protecting nature for nature's sake.
Right.
It's about protecting ourselves.
Exactly. A healthy planet means healthy people.
Mm-hmm.
And this law is a step in the right direction.
I'm curious to hear more about the controversy surrounding this law.
Okay.
We touched on them briefly earlier, but let's delve a little deeper.
Sure.
What are some of the key points of contention?
Well, one of the main criticisms is the potential cost of implementation.
Okay.
Some argue that the law could place a significant financial burden on certain industries,
mm-hmm.
particularly agriculture and forestry.
And their concern is that those costs could be passed on to consumers
right.
in the form of higher prices.
That's one concern.
Okay.
They also worry about the potential for job losses if certain industries are forced to scale back operations due to the new regulations.
So there's a fear that the law could have negative economic consequences,
right?
Especially in rural areas that are heavily reliant on agriculture and forestry.
Exactly. And there are also concerns about the potential for unintended consequences.
Okay.
For example, some critics argue that focusing on restoring certain habitats
mm-hmm.
could inadvertently harm other species.
Like if you prioritize restoring a wetland, you might accidentally displace a species that thrives in a drier environment.
Precisely. It's a complex issue.
Yeah.
And critics argue that the law doesn't adequately address these complexities.
Okay.
They worry that the focus on achieving specific targets could overshadow the need for a more nuanced and adaptive approach to restoration.
So it's not just about the costs.
Right.
It's also about the potential for unforeseen ecological impacts.
Exactly. And there are concerns about the impact on private property rights.
Okay.
Some landowners feel that the law could restrict their ability to use their land as they see fit, even if they're not actively engaged in activities that harm nature.
So there's this tension between the collective good of restoring nature.
Right.
And the individual rights of property owners.
Yes. And this is a delicate balance to strike.
Yeah.
The law does include some provisions for addressing these concerns.
Okay.
But critics argue that they don't go far enough.
It sounds like there's a lot of anxiety and uncertainty about how this law will actually play out on the ground.
Definitely change is rarely easy.
Right.
And this law represents a significant shift in how we manage and value nature.
Mm-hmm.
It's understandable that there are concerns and anxieties, especially among those who feel their livelihoods could be impacted.
But despite these concerns, it seems like the EU is committed to moving forward with this ambitious agenda.
Absolutely. The EU sees this law as a crucial step towards building a more sustainable and resilient future.
Okay, so we've delved into the controversies.
Yeah.
We've explored the potential economic and social implications of this law. What about the global context?
Okay.
Does this law have any implications beyond the borders of the EU?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
The EU's actions on environmental issues often have a ripple effect globally.
Okay.
They can set precedents, influence international agreements,
mm-hmm.
and inspire other countries to raise their own ambitions.
So the EU is seen as a leader in this space.
They often are.
Okay.
And the source material explicitly states that the EU wants to be a global leader in restoring nature.
Mm-hmm.
They're not just focused on their own backyard. They see this as a global challenge that requires international collaboration.
So they're hoping to inspire other countries to follow their lead.
Exactly. And they're also committed to working with international partners to promote nature restoration efforts worldwide.
Hmm.
They recognize that the biodiversity crisis is a global issue that transcends political boundaries.
Right.
What happens in one part of the world can impact ecosystems and economies far beyond its borders.
Okay. I'm sensing a theme here, interconnectedness. We've talked about how this law connects to the European Green Deal.
Right.
Global sustainability efforts, human health, even the economy.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also curious about the connections within the law itself.
Okay.
Does it take a holistic approach?
It does.
Or is it just a collection of individual targets?
The source material is quite explicit about the need for a holistic approach.
Okay.
It's not just about restoring individual ecosystems in isolation.
Right.
It's about recognizing the interconnectedness of the natural world.
Okay.
Think of it as a systems approach to nature restoration.
So it's not just about planting trees or cleaning up rivers. It's about understanding how all the pieces fit together.
Precisely. For example, the law emphasizes the importance of ecological connectivity.
Okay.
Ensuring that restored habitats are linked together to allow for the movement of species
mm-hmm.
and the flow of ecological processes.
Makes sense. You don't want to just create isolated islands of nature.
Right.
You need to create a network, a web of life.
Exactly. And the law goes beyond ecological connectivity.
Okay.
It also stresses the importance of social and economic integration.
What does that mean?
It's about ensuring that the restoration efforts benefit local communities and create sustainable livelihoods.
Okay.
The source material even mentions the potential for green jobs and ecotourism opportunities arising from these restoration efforts.
Okay, now we're talking.
Yeah.
It's not just about preserving nature for future generations.
Well,
it's about creating a more sustainable and equitable present.
Precisely. And this brings us back to a point we touched on earlier,
mm-hmm.
the role of private investment.
Right.
The law recognizes that public funding alone won't be enough to achieve these ambitious targets.
Right. They're looking to attract private capital.
Yeah.
Whether it's from businesses, impact investors, or even individuals who want to support nature restoration.
Mm-hmm.
But how do they plan to do that?
Yeah.
How do you convince people to invest in something as complex and long-term as nature restoration?
That's where innovation comes in.
Okay.
The source material repeatedly mentions the need for innovative financing mechanisms.
Give me some examples. What kind of innovative financing are we talking about?
Well, it mentions things like payments for ecosystem services.
Okay.
Where landowners are compensated for the environmental benefits their land provides.
Mm-hmm.
It also talks about green bonds.
Okay.
Which are financial instruments specifically designed to fund environmental projects.
Okay, so this is starting to sound like more than just an environmental law.
Yeah.
It's about reshaping the financial landscape.
Right.
Creating new incentives for investing in nature.
That's a great way to put it. It's about recognizing that we need to align our economic systems with our environmental goals.
Mm-hmm.
If we continue to invest in activities that harm nature, we're essentially shooting ourselves in the foot.
And the EU seems to be taking this seriously.
They are.
They're not just talking about attracting new investments.
Right.
They're also talking about reforming existing policies.
Exactly. The source material even mentions the need to reform harmful subsidies.
Okay.
Redirecting funds away from activities that damage the environment and towards those that support restoration efforts.
That's a bold move.
It is.
But it makes sense.
Yeah.
Why keep throwing money at things that are undermining our long-term well-being?
Right.
It's like investing in your own destruction.
Precisely. It's about recognizing that we need to shift our priorities.
Yeah.
Both in terms of how we spend our money and how we value the natural world.
Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive into the EU's nature restoration law. We've
yeah.
covered a lot of ground.
We have.
From the dire state of Europe's biodiversity
right.
to the ambitious goals of this new law, the controversy surrounding it, and its potential global implications.
Mm-hmm.
We've explored the economic, social, and ecological dimensions of this complex issue.
We have.
And it's clear that this law has the potential to be truly transformative, not just for Europe's natural world,
yeah.
but for our understanding of what it means to live sustainably on this planet. But it's also clear that this is just the beginning of a long and complex journey.
It is.
There are still many challenges to overcome and uncertainties to navigate.
Right.
What are some of the key things to watch for as this story continues to unfold?
Well, one of the key questions is how effectively the law will be implemented.
Okay.
Will member states be able to develop and execute ambitious national restoration plans?
Mm.
Will they be able to secure the necessary funding and navigate the political complexities?
So it's not just about having a law on the books.
Right.
It's about making sure it translates into real action on the ground.
Exactly. And it will be crucial to monitor progress, not just in terms of achieving specific targets, but also in terms of broader ecological and social outcomes.
Okay.
Are we seeing a genuine recovery of biodiversity?
Mm-hmm.
Are local communities benefiting from these restoration efforts?
Yeah.
Are we creating a more sustainable and equitable future?
These are important questions.
They are.
And it sounds like the EU is committed to transparency and accountability throughout this process.
They are. The law requires regular reporting on progress.
Okay.
And there will be ongoing monitoring and evaluation to assess the effectiveness of the restoration efforts.
So it's not a case of set it and forget it.
No.
This is going to be an ongoing process of learning and adaptation.
Exactly. And that's where you, the listener, come in.
Right.
Stay informed, engage in the debate, and hold decision makers accountable.
Okay.
The future of Europe's nature, and indeed our own well-being, depends on it.
That's a powerful thought to end on.
Yeah.
But before we wrap up this deep dive,
okay.
there's one more aspect I want to touch on, the role of innovation.
Right.
Earlier, we discussed the need for innovative financing mechanisms to attract private investment.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also curious about other forms of innovation.
Okay.
What are some of the ways that technology and creativity are being applied to the challenge of restoring nature?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
The field of ecological restoration is constantly evolving.
Right.
And there are some really exciting innovations emerging.
Mm-hmm.
One area that's particularly promising is the use of technology to monitor and assess ecosystems.
Okay.
We're seeing the development of sophisticated sensors, drones, and even artificial intelligence algorithms that can collect vast amounts of data on everything.
Wow.
From soil health to wildlife populations.
So we can use technology to get a much more detailed and comprehensive understanding of how ecosystems are functioning.
Exactly. And this data can then be used to inform restoration efforts, helping us make more informed decisions about where to focus our efforts and what techniques are most likely to be successful.
So it's about taking a data-driven approach to nature restoration.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And this can help us move beyond trial and error, increasing the efficiency and effectiveness of our restoration efforts.
That makes sense. What other innovations are on the horizon?
Another area that's generating a lot of excitement is the development of new restoration techniques, often inspired by nature itself. For example, scientists are studying how natural ecosystems regenerate after disturbances, like fires or floods.
Okay.
And they're applying those insights to develop more effective ways to restore degraded landscapes.
So it's about learning from nature's own resilience.
Exactly.
And applying those lessons to our restoration efforts.
We're also seeing the development of new approaches to seed collection and propagation.
Okay.
Using cutting-edge techniques to increase the genetic diversity and resilience of restored plant communities.
It sounds like there's a lot of creativity and ingenuity being applied to this challenge.
There is.
It's not just about brute force or throwing money at the problem.
Right.
It's about using our intelligence and our understanding of nature to find elegant solutions.
I completely agree. The field of ecological restoration is becoming increasingly sophisticated, and it's drawing on expertise from a wide range of disciplines, from biology and ecology to engineering and computer science.
It's a truly interdisciplinary field,
yeah.
And it sounds like there's a lot of reason for optimism.
There is.
Despite the daunting challenges we face.
I share your optimism. The EU's nature restoration law is a bold step forward.
Yeah.
And it's inspiring to see so much innovation and commitment being directed towards restoring our planet's natural heritage.
This deep dive has definitely given me a lot to think about.
Me too.
And I'm sure our listeners feel the same way.
Me too.
Before we wrap up, okay, is there anything else you want to highlight? Any final thoughts for our listeners?
I would just encourage everyone to stay curious, stay engaged, and stay hopeful.
Okay.
The challenges we face are significant, but so too is our capacity for innovation and collective action.
Yeah.
The future is not predetermined. We have the power to shape it.
Right.
And the choices we make today will determine what that future looks like.
That's a powerful message, and it's a reminder that we all have a role to play in restoring our planet's health and ensuring a sustainable future for generations to come.
Yeah, it's inspiring to see that kind of innovation and that determination, you know, being applied to such a critical challenge.
Right. And speaking of determination,
okay,
the EU's approach here with legally binding targets and real enforcement mechanisms is pretty neat.
It's a significant departure from the more voluntary or aspirational approaches we've seen in the past.
Yeah.
This is serious legislation.
Right.
With real consequences for non-compliance.
Yeah, this isn't just a symbolic gesture or a set of vague guidelines.
No.
It's a clear signal that the EU is committed to making tangible progress on nature restoration.
Precisely. And this approach could have implications beyond the EU's borders.
Okay.
We're seeing a global trend towards more legally binding frameworks for environmental protection. And the EU's actions could accelerate that trend.
So the EU might be setting a precedent,
encouraging
or even pressuring other countries to step up their game?
It's certainly a possibility.
Yeah.
The document we're looking at actually mentions the EU's commitment to working with international partners to promote nature restoration worldwide.
Okay.
They're not just focused on their own backyard.
Right.
They see this as a global challenge that requires a collective response.
That makes a lot of sense given the interconnected nature of these challenges.
Yeah.
What happens in one part of the world can have a ripple effect on ecosystems and economies far beyond its borders.
Absolutely. Think about migratory birds, for example.
Okay.
They don't recognize political boundaries.
Right.
Their survival depends on having healthy habitats
Yeah.
along their entire migration route, which might span multiple continents.
That's a great example.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've talked about the global context,
yeah.
but I'm also curious about the connections within the law itself.
Okay.
Does it take a holistic approach to nature restoration?
It does.
Or is it just a collection of individual targets?
The source material emphasizes the need for a holistic, integrated approach.
Okay.
It's not just about restoring individual ecosystems in isolation.
Right.
It's about recognizing the interconnectedness of nature
mm-hmm.
and understanding cool. how all the pieces fit together.
So a systems approach to nature restoration.
Exactly. The law specifically emphasizes the importance of ecological connectivity.
Okay.
Ensuring that restored habitats are linked together to allow for the movement of species and the flow of ecological processes.
It's like creating a network of healthy ecosystems.
Yeah.
Rather than just isolated pockets of nature.
That's a great analogy. And the law goes beyond just ecological connectivity.
Ugh.
It also stresses the importance of social and economic integration.
So making sure that the restoration efforts benefit local communities
right.
and create sustainable livelihoods.
Precisely. The source material even highlights the potential for green jobs and ecotourism opportunities
okay.
arising from these restoration efforts.
That's encouraging. It's not just about preserving nature for its own sake. It's about creating a more sustainable and equitable future for everyone.
Right.
And this brings us back to something we touched on earlier.
Yeah.
The role of private investment. The law clearly recognizes that public funding alone won't be enough to achieve these ambitious targets.
Yeah, they're looking to attract private capital from a variety of sources, businesses, impact investors, even individuals who want to support nature restoration.
But how do you convince people to invest in something as complex and long-term as nature restoration?
Right.
It's not like investing in a tech startup where you expect to see quick returns.
That's where innovation comes in. The report repeatedly mentions the need for innovative financing mechanisms to bridge that gap.
Give me some examples. What kind of innovative financing are we talking about?
Well, it mentions things like payments for ecosystem services, where landowners are compensated for the environmental benefits their land provides.
Okay.
Imagine a farmer being paid for planting trees that help improve water quality in a nearby river.
Mm-hmm.
That's a win-win situation. The farmer gets an income, and the ecosystem benefits.
That makes a lot of sense. What other innovative financing mechanisms are they exploring?
Another example is green bonds, which are financial instruments specifically designed to fund environmental projects.
Okay.
These bonds can attract investors who are looking for both financial returns and a positive environmental impact.
So it's about creating new financial tools that align with our environmental goals.
Exactly. And the law doesn't just focus on attracting new investments.
Okay.
It also recognizes the need to reform existing policies.
Such as what kind of policy reforms are they talking about?
One of the key areas they highlight is the need to reform harmful subsidies.
Uh-huh.
Right now, many governments around the world provide subsidies that actually encourage activities that damage the environment.
Right.
Such as unsustainable agriculture or fossil fuel extraction.
So it's about redirecting those funds towards activities that support nature restoration and a transition to a more sustainable economy.
Precisely. It's about aligning our economic policies with our environmental goals. We can't keep subsidizing activities that undermine our long-term well-being.
It sounds like the EU is taking a comprehensive approach to this challenge, tackling it from multiple angles.
They are, and this is a story that's just beginning to unfold.
Yeah.
It'll be fascinating to see how this law is implemented in practice and what impact it has both within the EU and globally.
This deep dive has definitely given me a lot to think about.
Me too.
We've covered a lot of ground, from the science of ecological restoration to the economics of sustainable development to the politics of international cooperation.
Right.
It's a complex and multifaceted issue.
It is.
But it's also incredibly important.
Yeah.
The future of our planet's natural heritage and indeed our own well-being depends on our ability to find solutions.
I couldn't agree more, and I want to emphasize that this is not just an issue for policymakers or scientists.
Mm-hmm.
It's an issue that affects all of us.
Mm-hmm.
We all have a role to play in restoring our planet's health and ensuring a sustainable future for generations to come.
What are some of the things that listeners can do to get involved and make a difference?
There are so many ways to contribute. Start by learning more about the challenges facing your local ecosystems.
Okay.
Support organizations that are working on the ground to restore nature. Make sustainable choices in your own life.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to your elected officials about the importance of environmental protection.
Those are great suggestions. Every action, no matter how small, can make a difference.
Absolutely. And remember, this is not just about saving nature. It's about saving ourselves. A healthy planet is essential for a healthy and prosperous future.
That's a powerful message to end on. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the EU's nature restoration law.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been an eye-opening journey. We'll be sure to revisit this topic as the story continues to unfold.
Sounds good.